you very much indeed. Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis, and welcome to The Now Show, and a few changes this campaign. Rather than the usual cast of six, we believe we can achieve the show's objectives with just the two of us.
That's right. Based on our shock and awe material, we are also confident that it will only last half an hour.
Obviously, there'll be pockets of resistance, but most taxi drivers listen to Talk Sport anyway. And now over to Now Show spokesman Mitch Benn.
What follows is a 100% word-for-word true story. I was getting out of bed this afternoon, 'cause I had a show recording starting soon. I'd been up till 6 a.m. composing funny songs to sing that were hard-hitting and satirical. My phone began to ring. They said, "Yeah, Mitch, about these funny songs you wrote. Thing is, you see, the show this week's a bit one note. There's too much heavy stuff on this week's programme, we're afraid. It's all a bit monotonous, we need some light and shade. Could you write a song that's not about the war? Stop complaining, Mitch, you've got an hour or more. We know you're working very hard, we know that you've been ill. We like the songs you've written, but we really feel that still we kind of need a song that's not about the war. We can't make the punters too depressed and bored. If we go on about Iraq, they'll be as miserable as hell. Oh, by the way, could you stay clear of mentioning the turkey game as well?" So I logged onto the net and checked the news. Gosh, there's so much going on, it's hard to choose. The Conservatives aren't doing zip, they're usually worth a line. I could come up with lots of wacky rhymes for Liechtenstein. I could sneer at the ratings for BBC Three. Controversial stuff, you will agree. Oh God, this is pathetic. I can't even pretend that this song has a beginning or a middle or an end. But at least it's not about the bloody war. There's not the slightest reference, I'm sure. I wrote in how you asked me to. Oh God, I feel so cheap. Send the money to the usual place. Now sort yours all, I'm going back to sleep.
Now, the point of military code names, forgive me, used to be secrecy, isn't it? To disguise what was being planned. 1944, Normandy invasion, Operation Overlord, capture the Rhine bridges, Market Garden. This conflict is called Operation Iraqi Freedom. Now, that's fair enough, but it's not a code name, is it? No, that's a brand name. That's the military equivalent of "I can't believe it's not butter."
In fact, some American generals want to change it to "I can't believe we've not won yet."
So everything's about TV now, and they know it. You can see in their eyes, they know it.
You're watching BBC News 24. Watching now. Now there's a war on, and you might get to see some fighting. Where were you last month, eh? When we were doing reports on Yorkshire hospitals and nursery fees. Where were you then? When Sophie did the weather report and cried because she was so lonely. Anyway, in a minute, a green screen with flashes on. But first... first, a roundup of today's other news. Oh, that's right. Switch over, part-timers!
It's not just TV either, it's also movies. We've all seen so many war films that we know all the names. We know all the names, like the US Cavalry. They're still called the US Cavalry, and their helicopters are Apaches. How does that work? That's like the Spanish flying around in Aztecs. The Australian Army and their trusty Aborigine helicopter. Then there's the US Marine Corps, and I always think of Full Metal Jacket. I imagine they're all jogging towards Baghdad, singing. "I don't know, but I've been told this war would be over at 5 days old." Plus, there's the 101st Airborne, 5 million TV viewers know. They're the ones from Band of Brothers. We all saw them invade Normandy. If Rumsfeld has his way, we probably will again. They're all familiar names, you see. It helps you feel for the coalition forces.
Although, let's face it, it's not a coalition. It's a duo. That's like saying, ah, Simon and Garfunkel. What a great coalition. England played Rooney and Owen in the front coalition. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Anton Deck, Britain's leading comedy Geordie coalition.
Last I heard, as they say, that there are 47 countries in the coalition. So when it's all over, Bush will probably send out all his thank you letters. Dear Denmark, thank you for the set of coasters. I know HQ found them useful. No, I think this conflict's more like an episode of Friends. It's all American, but with British as special guest star. To add a bit of class, because we do, don't we? And again, it's Hollywood, I think. The Americans have cast themselves as Vin Diesel.
On to Baghdad.
But they want the British to be Hugh Grant.
Crikey, better bring you some fresh water. You know, hearts and minds thing.
See, I think I've been watching too much, because with the radio and the TV on all the time, Hugh and I have both got this problem. What do you tell small children?
See, right at the start of the conflict, in an attempt to avoid over-militarism, I hid my son's Action Man. But it hasn't worked. He's been looking for him with Playmobil covert forces. And launching plasticine explosives at any toy box he thinks he might be hiding in. Yesterday, in a purely speculative attack, he trashed two floors of his sister's doll's house. To his credit, he did make sure that Barbie was out. And it's worse. It's worse. His sister knows where the Action Man is hidden, so about once every 2 days, she films it on the camcorder and plays it back through the television. Just to show that he's still alive. In fact, to be honest, she has filmed several different Action Men. One of them had glasses and hands that can really grip, but so far he hasn't really been able to tell the difference. To stop her, he keeps on pulling out the aerial, but she's got it coming through the SCART lead and she's been to Dixon's and bought another six of them. Frankly, it's very tempting to tell him that Action Man is at the top of our wardrobe, but I'm not sure he's really thought what he's going to replace him with. Will Buzz Lightyear be acceptable as the leader of an interim government?
Then, of course, you have to explain the whole business of, you know, this business of what's fair and what's not fair. This whole idea of war being so formal is very strange.
The Iraqis have claimed, of course, they're not disguising their soldiers as civilians. It's just that having absorbed so much American culture, they're operating a policy of dress down Friday.
The Americans, of course, are all wearing camouflage. It's within the rules of war to dress as a patch of sand, but not as a resident of a city. But let's not forget, it's still less than a century ago that British soldiers used to go into battle wearing basically Man United kit. But with long trousers, right? Because camouflage was not honourable. Of course, what's odd, of course, is when you see all those people at HQ all wearing camouflage, because half the army is supply and logistics people, and they're all essentially office-based, and they stick out a mile in battle dress.
Yeah, what they need is a new range of camouflage outfits that make them look like a pin board, or a jacket covered in little fish to disguise them as a screensaver. It is, of course, in war, you know, it's very difficult to know what's going on. And this time, intelligence seems to have been provided on the budget airline principle. They claim to have taken a major town, and when you get there, you find it's just an airport 50 miles away.
Still, through all the white noise of opinion in the media, you do get the occasional facts. It's like, you know, the US have been bombing completely at will because Iraq has no air defence. Well, I didn't know till this week, maybe I should have done, but I didn't, that Saddam Hussein actually does have an air force, but it's in Iran. It's true. What happened was that in 1991, he knew it was all about to kick off, and he went to the Iranians after a decade at war and having killed 500,000 of them, and he said, "Will you look after my planes?" And they said, "Yeah, all right." And 6 months later, he went back to get them, and they'd all been clamped.
I've also been fascinated to read about Saddam's bunker. It was built in 1982, apparently. Let's hope it's been redecorated since then, otherwise it will be very easy to spot. US troops will break through the door, shouting, "This is the one! There's a posture of Cyndi Lauper on the wall!" Apparently, to penetrate the bunker, you have to get 14 cruise missiles to land one after the other in exactly the same spot. It's the military equivalent of a snooker trick shot. John Virgo lines them up in the back of a B-52. But even then, Saddam's got to be there. There's also a network of deep tunnels, you see, so Saddam can travel between his bunkers.
Yes, and they can't bomb them. But apparently intelligence says that most of the escalators aren't working. and there's signal failure at Kirkuk.
The other thing is that the architect is really proud of it. He's a German called Karl Esser. Presumably he's hoping for further clients. Other people who need a blast-proof shelter where they can hide for a year.
Hello, Carl. John Leslie here.
Can you imagine how weird it will be if after all these years they do capture him alive? I mean, that would be so bizarre. Plus, it would solve Martin Bashir's problem, wouldn't it? There he is thinking, oh, there's no one big enough left to interview. Oh, hang on.
Saddam, I've seen how you are with your sons, and I must say it's remarkable.
And Saddam's there thinking, oh, I completely trust this guy. He seems really genuine. They do have, of course, overwhelming superiority, the Kurdish, and they've got a device that can destroy all electrical equipment and leave buildings intact. I've got one of these, actually. It's called a three-year-old.
I keep reading this is the first true TV war, and it is. It's on so much that people are getting confused, phoning up and trying to vote off Raggy Omar.
I think...
Raggy...
He'll be so pleased when he gets home, won't he? There you were, with bombs falling all around you. We were doing Scooby-Doo jokes about him. Like the whole nation's been doing every night for 2 weeks.
Raggy, find you! Route 52!
I know it was observational comedy, but I'm still offended. I think what it's really like, actually, it's like one of those programmes that are on all the time at the moment. You know, like Living the Dream and No Turning Back. It's like one of those programmes about a couple going and setting up a guest house in Provence.
For over 10 years now, George and Donald have dreamed of invading Iraq and setting up their own little democracy. Their budget is $75 billion, but they have no experience of desert warfare, and all their friends say they're mad, except for Tony.
You know, I just think, you know, yeah, whatever, go for it.
But it doesn't matter, though, does it? Because America now move on to round two, where they meet North Korea. And that is going to be a tough one, because I don't know whether you've noticed, but North Korea appears to be run by Cartman. Seems to share a lot of the same qualities to me. In fact, basically, it's North Park.
I'm going down south, I'm going to have myself a time.
Hey, card song!
I've got plutonium, I've got plutonium.
Hey, Carson, don't mess around with that, dude. That's really bad.
Yeah, screw you. I'm going to build a missile, and I'm going to fire it into the sea, and if anybody tries to stop me, I'm going to blow them all up.
Hey, steady on, dude. Hey, isn't that Colin Powell, the formerly moderate but now increasingly hawkish U.S. Secretary of State?
Hello, children. Now, what's all this I hear about President Kartsung having got plutonium?
Careful, dude. He's really angry.
Now, come on, Kartsung. You just put that down.
Yeah, kill you guys! You hung your imperialist ass out of here! I'm gonna blow up the whole damn world!
Oh, my God! They nuked Kenny! You coming bastards!
You can't stop me. I've got the bomb. I've got the bomb.
President Kartsung, guy. Don't do bombs, guy. Bombs are bad. Don't do bombs, guy. Guy.
Yeah, guy.
Ow, guy.
Right, that's enough.
Oh no, it's not Rumsfeld, dude. The awesomely militarist Uberhawker has a plan to conquer China in 24 hours using one midget robot.
Wait, everybody, this is crazy. War is never the answer.
I ain't burning, Sheriff!
Ooh! Can I wear Dexter?
Right. And now, back to the celebrities. Next week, the killer virus. Now, let News Quiz deal with that, for God's sake. It's a killer virus, isn't it, Simon? And now, with a report that doesn't reveal his movements but is being monitored by the Iraqi authorities, it's Now Show Entertainment Guide with John Holmes.
Good news! Finsbury Park cleric Abu Hamza is going into EastEnders. Producers have confirmed that the religious frog-eyed mental witch doctor is to be Pauline Fowler's new love interest after she found out that Private Pike was a gay. He'll be joining the soap in July, playing Mr. Opodopoulos, the imaginary laundrette owner. And his character, like all the others, will get off with Cat Slater, turn out to be a policeman, then turn out to be Den Watts' long-lost son, then turn out to be Den Watts, and then finally be killed when he gets his hook caught up in one of Pat Butcher's earrings and she accidentally squats on him. Hamza's agent says the phone hasn't stopped ringing since he first hit the headlines, and he's also set to appear on this summer's hit, He's a Murderous Mad Mosque Muslim, Get Him Out of Here. That's hosted by Richard Littlejohn and the Daily Mail. Now, in case you didn't think he was a big enough git already, podgy womanising crooner Mick Hucknall has announced his intention this week to enter politics. Hucknall flapped open his shapeless ginger mouth, citing Tony Blair as both a friend and a great man, as if things weren't bad enough for the Prime Minister at the moment already. And it's all because Robin Cook has left to spend more time with his man Winkle. And since that's happened, the Labour Party has had a vacancy for an unpopular carroty little man, and Hucknall thinks he's the man for the job. But even though now they've been linked by politics, every step is being taken to prevent Lothario sex junkies Hucknall and Cook from ever actually meeting in case they decide to mate.
Now, wherever and whenever you're listening to this programme, whether it's Friday nights or Saturday, please bear this in mind. You have just missed your last opportunity to take advantage of tax-free saving in the 2002-03 tax year. Sorry, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, but it's gone though, isn't it? Eh? Because the 5th of April is the last day of the tax year and it's a Saturday, so sorry, tomorrow is a whole new box of monkeys. Yeah. I know that isn't very interesting, but there's a war on and we're desperate. And what a chance it is you've missed. If you had invested last year rather than just sat on your hands, your hard-earned savings could now be worth up to 40% less than they were when you put them in. It's an attractive offer, isn't it? And it would have completely buggered the plotline for Brewster's Millions.
So, Brewster, did you manage to spend £30 million and end up with nothing?
Yes, I put it in the Equitable Life.
Still, as financial advisors tell us, with the stock market at its current low, there's never been a better opportunity to invest for the future, because apparently shares can go up as well as down. I know it's unlikely. Frankly, the whole savings industry is stuffed.
Invest in a black hole pension plan and you can look forward to an insecure future. Every pound you invest could be worth 50 pence by this time next year. And remember, that loss is entirely tax-free. So if you don't want to spend your old age worrying, then buy one of our pensions, because the stress will kill you way before you get old. Free phone for details of our personal impoverishment plans and I really wouldn't bother savings accounts.
The basic trouble with money is that most of us don't understand it. Most people apparently don't even know what an ISA is. Or that if you buy the wrong one, you can use a de-ISA to clear it. Come on, there's a war on and we're desperate. So anyway, just for you, here is your handy cut-out-and-keep Now Show financial jargon buster. Share.
A financial security offering you the chance to earn 100 millionth of a vast company maintained only by your bank or pension company anyway.
Bond.
A financial security offering you the chance to buy the debt of a vast company mainly owned by your bank or pension company anyway.
Junk bond.
Roger Moore.
Pension.
All that stands between you and the retirement living on cat food.
State pension.
A retirement living on cat food.
And now, with his thoughts on one of Britain's most respectable industries, please welcome Marcus Brigstock.
Hello. See, there are times in my life when middle classness just
bursts out of me like an alien through John Hurt's stomach. Well, a bit like an alien, sort of posh alien who knows how to pronounce words like hors d'oeuvre and probably owns some peacocks. And I can't explain this for the life of me, is that as soon as winter comes around, the only thing I can think of is strapping pieces of wood to my feet and paying a fortune for someone to carry me up a hill and then sliding at ludicrous pace down what can only be described as an ice cliff. And then, having achieved this idiotic victory, immediately doing it again and again for a whole week. What is it with posh people and sliding? You know, we see a snowy hill and think, oh, I could slide down that sideways and then drink some hot, ruined wine. It costs a fortune to go skiing, but there was a new dimension to it this year that I never actually noticed before, right? Some places you go, you have to get insurance to go skiing. So I called up this woman. She said it would cost £30 for a week's insurance. I said, okay, what does that cover me for? She said, that covers me for up to £10 million worth of damage. I thought, how bad at skiing would you have to be to cause £10 million worth of damage? That's one hell of a skiing accident, isn't it? What would you have to do? Fall over and start a small avalanche that wipes out a tiny Austrian village? You know, jump so high you accidentally hit a plane, causing it to crash in the mountains so that all the passengers eat each other? Because that's the rules, isn't it? If you land in the hills, you can eat the person next to you. It's crazy. Anyway, it turns out it costs you £10 million if you brush past an American lawyer who's learning to parallel turn and accidentally knock him into a snowdrift. I'm not saying the Americans are litigious, but the last time I went there, I was advised to have my scrotum tattooed with "may contain nuts." Didn't know, meet someone with allergies. So what do? We spend all our time insuring ourselves in case something bad happens. All we're doing effectively is gambling against our own misfortune. I hate all those ads you see of faded British stars holding fishing rods in their 70s going,
hello, are you convinced you're about to die soon? Why not bet on your family's future? If it turns out you've been a silly billy and you don't die, we'll keep on taking your money until you do. But if you do pop your clogs anytime soon, your greedy children will be absolutely rolling in it. As long as they can unravel our red tape and we can't prove they did you in. Call today. No need for a medical. We'll take anyone's money. Unless you look ill, then you can sod off.
And now, the Now Show Sports Roundup.
All right, we know the average Radio 4 listener doesn't really like sport, but look, there's a war on and we're desperate. England beat Turkey 2-0 at Sunderland's Stadium of Light. Not a bad result, considering they wouldn't let us use their airspace or station any players in their half.
England now top the group and qualification seems possible, meaning that we will inevitably lose to Liechtenstein at home. No such problems for Wales, who are strolling through after being drawn against easy sides like Azerbaijan and Italy. Rowing, and this Sunday sees the University Boat Race, and there are two innovations this year. Firstly, it's between Brunel and North Warwickshire College of Further Education. Only joking, it's Oxford and Cambridge again. Secondly, lovers of innuendo everywhere will be delighted with the true news that it's to be enhanced by a new piece of technical wizardry, the Coxcam. Not only is it funny already, but they're just storing up trouble for themselves.
Oh, that looks at least two lengths. Over to the Coxcam.
And Cambridge stroking at a terrific rate. Looks like about 38 to the minute. Over to the Coxcam.
Oh, my goodness! Have Oxford caught a crab. Over to the Coxcam.
There's a war on and we're cheap.
Yeah, poor old Raggy Omar. Yeah. I don't know what he said to who at the Christmas party, but it was a bad idea, wasn't it? It really was. That really is one of the all-time short straw scenarios, isn't it? Good news, Raggy. The Americans are planning the heaviest bombardment in the entire history of aerial warfare, and we want you to be underneath it. But it does kind of wind me up when all of Raggy's reports are always prefaced with that all Raggy's reports are being monitored by Iraqi authorities, as if all the reports from journos stationed with coalition forces aren't all being cut to ribbons by military censors on our side, you know?
I don't care if I lose my job, I will not be silenced. I'm
I'm not afraid to speak my mind in times of war and violence. I'm sick of hearing how support for war is universal. I'm gonna tell it how it is, even if it's controversial. This war's a total that's how I feel about it. And George Bush is what I just have to shout it. And Donald Rumsfeld is a dumb for quit the things he's doing. Careless talk costs lives, they say, well, so do thoughtless minds. And nobody's gonna stop me speaking as I find. They'll censor all our coverage and harass our reporters. But I say, just like I ought to, and Tony Blair can get, and Colin Powell, and Vulcan, when he's a sing it loud.
So, we come to the first audience question of the series, and since it's the Grand National on Saturday, we thought that obviously the best part of horse racing is that horses have silly names. So what we've asked our audience is that if they owned a racehorse, what would they call it, and also who would ride it and why? And what fine selections we've
I've got
here.
Central Line. Who would ride it? No one. It's not going to be running on the day. Dead Cert. Who would ride it? Some big fat bloke, so it comes in last, and that will screw up anyone who bets on it. Because gambling is the work of the devil.
Yes. Now, every now and then we get a reply that makes us wonder if we should have a bar open before the show. If you owned a racehorse, what would you call it? Goat. Who would ride it? A dog, because the cat was busy.
What would you call it? Ken Dodd's dad's dog's dead. And who would ride it? Ken Dodd.
So there we are, fine selection for the South News National if you're listening on Saturday. Tomorrow's if you're listening on Friday. So get out, stick your money on. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
That was the Now Show, starring Hugh Dennis and Steve Punt, with John Holmes, Emma Kennedy, Marcus Brigstock and Mitch Benn. Additional material was written by Paul Powell.